The last few days of the Supreme Court session generated a lot of headlines this past week. While some of the cases the justices agreed to take up in the fall are notable, a Monday ruling on a somewhat esoteric case may resonate in the years and decades ahead in ways that are difficult to anticipate. An article on the decision in the Atlantic magazine was headlined, "A Major Church-State Ruling That Shouldn't Have Happened." And I'm happy to welcome the author of that piece, constitutional law professor Garrett Epps, to State of Belief Radio. Garrett, thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with just a quick summary of Trinity versus Comer, please.
Well, Trinity Lutheran Church is a congregation in Columbia, Missouri, and they wanted to qualify for grants under a state program that would allow them to use recycled rubber tires to produce a sort of softer surface for their daycare playground. The church itself operates a daycare open to not just church members' children, but children in the community. Mm-hmm. But it is the church itself that runs it. It's more common to have a daycare that has a separate nonprofit with its own board. As a result of that organizational feature, the state of Missouri, pointing to its own constitution, said, we cannot give a grant that flows directly into the treasury of a church. There is a no funding provision in the Missouri Constitution, and as many as 38 other states have similar provisions that just says no state money can go directly to subsidize a church. You know, they were represented by advocacy groups that saw this as an opportunity to get rid of or weaken this state wall of separation, which is different and often stronger than the federal one. Mm-hmm. And the court's decision was that the church was entitled to compete for the grant, that the restriction on a church itself being eligible for these general grants was unconstitutional.
Garrett, you wrote that both the majority opinion and the leading dissent got the issue wrong. What do you mean by that?
Well, Chief Justice Roberts, in his opinion, he characterized the case as saying that the state of Missouri wanted to discriminate against the church because of its religious identity. And he analogized it to a Maryland provision in the 19th century that said that Jews couldn't hold office. That's really not what was going on, because if the daycare center had had a separate board, had had its own treasury, mm-hmm. then they would certainly have been eligible. The fact that they're located in a church or that they have a religious identity under Missouri law, that would not have kept them from being eligible. So it isn't the church's religious identity, it's its form of organization. There's no discrimination against religion as such in the Missouri law. Now, Justice Sotomayor, who for herself and Justice Ginsburg wrote a scathing dissent, she took the position that for the church to receive this funding at all would violate the Establishment Clause. I myself think that's going a little far. There is a concept in constitutional law, in the law of church and state, that was created by Chief Justice Rehnquist, and that's called play in the joints. And what he says is, it can't be, it's just too unwieldy to have a position that says that everything that is not forbidden by the Establishment Clause is required by the Free Exercise Clause and vice versa. States have got to have a little leeway to have their own constitutions and their own systems and work this out through their political system, which, by the way, is what happened in Missouri. By the time the case got to the Supreme Court, it was no longer really a case. I frankly think the way to deal with it would have been to dismiss it, because at the last election, Missouri elected a new attorney general and a new governor, and both of these gentlemen had run for office on the explicit platform that they were going to reinterpret the Missouri Constitution in order to allow the funding to flow to the church. And that is, in fact, what happened. After their election, the state changed its regulations and said that under their reading of the Missouri Constitution, the church could compete for these. The church could get its grant. And so I think the court should have simply dismissed the case as moot. And I was distressed, it seemed to me, that a number of people on the right side of the court were eager to reach this issue, and they kind of refused to let go of this kind of Flying Dutchman of a case that really didn't belong in the courtroom.
So why did the high court not just throw it out?
I think there are at least three justices who are very eager. They have a long-term agenda of wanting to really weaken the existing precedents about separation of church and state. That's Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and the newest justice, Justice Neil Gorsuch, who wrote separately to say, as far as we're concerned, there can be no differentiation between churches and other nonprofit organizations, which was really not the issue presented in the court. But I think they're sending a signal to litigators below, bring us some more cases. You've got at least three votes in the bag here. And, of course, Justice Kennedy may retire soon. It's a very common practice of the Supreme Court justices to signal we want cases on this issue. And that's, I think, what was going on.
We certainly know that Gorsuch wants that horse to be ridden.
And, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Well, look, let's do broaden it a little, Garrett. What could this ruling mean for other cases going forward?
Well, I think that churches, you know, are going to be emboldened to make certain demands for inclusion in government funding programs. And at the same time, there are going to be demands by some of these institutions. The legal term is houses of worship, because obviously there are religions that don't call their congregations churches.
Right.
There are going to be demands by some of them that they be eligible for funds but exempt from certain regulations, particularly the regulations involving discrimination. And, of course, this is a very serious problem of conscience for a lot of religious people. There are people who think that including same-sex couples or gay and lesbian people or transgender people, that this is against their faith. Mm-hmm. And they're taking a fairly aggressive position that they can't be required not to discriminate and they should receive the funding. And there's a real tension there because, by tradition, government funding comes with certain conditions. And the questions the court has usually asked are simply, are the conditions reasonable and are they related to the purpose of the grant and so forth. And it's a worrisome development. One of the reasons that the framers of the First Amendment included a kind of hint that there's separation is because they saw religious issues as particularly divisive. These are the heirs of the Protestant Wars of the 17th century. And we're going to have a lot of really divisive disputes about this. Now, at the same time, you got to admit, anybody has to admit, that it is a searing problem for some of these religious traditions to be required to recognize what their theology tells them is sinful. My view, you know, you didn't entirely ask for it, but I'm going to give it to you. My view is that, as happened in Missouri, this ought to be worked out by the political process. This ought to be worked out by debates, the people's representatives, and so forth in a civil way, which is how we determine the structure of exemptions in our federal civil rights laws. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a desire and a perception on the part of some to win these in court rather than as part of a debate, and I regret that. But that's just a forecast. I can't tell you that's what's going to happen.
Well, we have the information that came from the Hobby Lobby case and corporations now having religious freedom rights like individuals. We know that we're going down a pretty dangerous road that was traveled by people who said that they were against interracial marriage because of their faith. We're getting in a really complex situation where a person seems to be able to say that's against my faith, and without any interest in how deep the faith is, whether this is an excuse or whether it really is a conviction, that person gets an out on some of these issues. So what insights do you have from that on what's likely to happen on these religion cases going forward?
There are twin guarantees in the religion clauses. There's the guarantee that the government will not establish a religion, and there's the guarantee that religious people will be given the free exercise of their religious beliefs. And those two guarantees have always been slightly in tension, because the more concessions you make for specifically religious behavior, the more you will be accused of establishing that religion. You know, why is it that Sabbatarians, for example, are exempt from certain unemployment laws, whereas people who just think they ought to have Saturday off are not? Isn't that establishment? And the rough truce that was reached over the years was that religious bodies get certain advantages, you know, beginning with freedom from taxation, but going forward, for example, that in certain kinds of hiring decisions, religious bodies can discriminate in favor of their own adherents. You know, if you're going to hire a custodian even for your church, you can say, we want a member of our church, which would be a violation for a secular corporation to do. So we're seeing two things, which is the first thing, as you noted, is that the number of organizations that now apparently hold free exercise rights is growing. In the Hobby Lobby case, the court said that closely held family corporations had a religious free exercise rights, even though they are for profit. That was a very novel holding. But if you look at legislation that's going on in the states, you'll see that they're increasingly guaranteeing free exercise rights to all for-profit corporations, regardless of whether they're closely held. You know, ExxonMobil will have the right to engage in certain kind of religious discrimination under some of these statutes, and they're even expanding, both the court and the statutes are expanding the free exercise rights to include government officials who, under some of these states, you know, a judge or a county clerk has a religious right to refuse government services to same-sex couples. And in a case called Town of Greece versus Galloway, you had a city government that was beginning each of its meetings with a sectarian prayer, by which it was a very specific denomination, almost always Christian, usually Catholic, that was addressed to the audience that had come to see their city government meet, and often said to them, you need to accept Jesus, you need to be a Christian, or you won't be saved. And the court was looking at an objection by some of the local people who said, I don't see why I should have to go to petition my local government and be subject to Christian ministers picked by the council itself to send me a religious message. And the court said, oh, but if we interfere with this prayer, we're going to be compromising the free exercise rights of the members of the council. That's what this is about. They have a religious right to hold these prayers and make them part of the official business of government. And that's an extraordinary holding, if you think about it, that now government officials have got free exercise rights that ordinary members of the public lack. So we're seeing this expansion of free exercise and a corresponding reduction in what establishment means, and the end is not yet in sight.
Garrett Epps teaches constitutional law and creative writing for law students at the University of Baltimore. His latest book is American Justice 2014, Nine Clashing Visions on the Supreme Court. Professor Epps' article in the Atlantic Magazine, where he is a contributing editor, is titled A Major Church-State Ruling That Shouldn't Have Happened, and we'll link to that from stateofbelief.com. I sure thank you for taking time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
It's a privilege.